and not present in the judicial center, and counsel are in your different offices or home locations. As the parties are aware, and just for the record, I'll say that the Minnesota Court of Appeals is declining to hold oral arguments live at the Minnesota Judicial Center here in St. Paul, or in our other courtrooms outside the St. Paul area outstate, where we typically hold oral arguments. And we're doing so for the good of the public, for the parties, for the attorneys and court staff, in light of the ongoing national emergency responding to the pandemic. We are therefore entertaining these oral arguments by video conferencing, particularly through the tool WebEx, with none of the judges or the participants being in the same location, and at least not in the same room. Just so that parties are aware, the lawyers are aware here, the technology is not a perfect substitute for in-person hearings, but we all have to recognize this in the oral argument, because there may be, I understand, some delay or lag time between a moment a word is spoken and the moment it's heard by some other. So please bear that in mind as we accommodate each other in this discussion. But in keeping with due process, our hearings are still being recorded, at least audibly, and they will be made open and available to the public, I understand, as soon as possible after the hearing, so that anyone who wants to hear the audio recording on the judiciary's website can do so. But the rules of presentation remain the same. As always, each party will have 15 minutes to argue the case, with an additional 5 minutes to appellant for rebuttal. We do ask that you state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. And although I haven't already said so, this is the case of Walmart versus Winona County, and the separate case of Walmart versus Martin County, joined for the purposes of this appeal. Counsel, if you're ready to proceed, counsel for the appellant, you have the floor. The virtual floor, that is.
Thank you, Your Honor. Edward Fox of Bassford Remley, appearing on behalf of the appellants, Walmart. Your Honor, there are two questions that are presented on this appeal. And the first one is this: does Chapter 278 provide the exclusive means to vindicate state and federal rights to equal protection in property tax matters based on the governing precedent in the programmed land and Adinlati cases? Below, the counties rely principally on those two decisions to argue erroneously, in our view, that those two cases held that 278 was the exclusive means, or to use their language, the exclusive path to addressing constitutional claims in property tax matters. And the bottom line is that neither one of those cases say that. As we've indicated in our brief, both of those cases rejected the constitutional claims that were asserted in those matters, not because those claims were preempted as a matter of law of the 278 statute, but because in both cases, the claimants failed to allege or show that there was a constitutional violation with respect to the applicable standard of review that required a showing of systematic, arbitrary, or intentional discrimination.
Can I ask you a question that, hypothetical question that sort of helps me to frame what exactly your argument is, and the reach of your argument? Assume, for the sake of this question only, that we're dealing with a state statute, the tax assessment chapter, and that adds the following language. Assume that it says, with the same state statute of limitations, that all remedies available under state and federal constitutional causes of action are available in a tax assessment challenge brought under this chapter. Assume that's the language in the statute somewhere. Does that change your, would you agree in that case that the tax assessment statute would be the end of the question?
I don't agree that it would, Your Honor, and I think that that actually goes to the heart of the county's argument, because the counties are alleging that directly or indirectly, somehow Chapter 278 is the equivalent of or embodies constitutional claims. And my view with respect to your hypothetical would be that if the legislature, the Minnesota legislature, were to adopt a statute that said, as part of our statute, you're going to incorporate federal and state constitutional claims for equal protection and uniformity in taxation. That in itself probably would be a constitutional violation that would be subject to judicial review on whether or not the legislature could amend a party's rights under the United States Constitution as well as under the Minnesota Constitution simply by a legislative rule. So I would not agree that that would necessarily address the issues that are raised on this appeal.
Just so I'm clear then, you're saying even if all of the remedies available under the federal statute in a claim brought under Section 1983, the federal any constitutional claim or the state constitutional claim could be addressed, and the same remedies would be available under the tax assessment chapter, you're saying that even that would not be enough to require that or allow the state to impose the statute of limitations under the tax assessment chapter. Is that what you're saying?
Based on that hypothetical, that would be my position, Your Honor. And it relates in part also because of the applicable statutes of limitation that relate to state and federal constitutional claims, because as we've alleged and argued in our briefs, under the Jacobson case and the Grossfeld case, those cases are clear that respect to state and federal constitutional claims, they're governed by the six-year statute of limitations. And I think that were the legislature to say we're now going to reduce that statute of limitations to 1 year, that would implicate a question of whether or not, as a matter of law, that was infringing rights that were protected under the state and federal constitution. So let me get to the second issue. And the second issue is, under the applicable Rule 12 standard of review, can the county carry its burden of demonstrating to a certainty that Walmart is unable to state any viable claim under any set of facts that could be proved at trial? And the answer to that question has to be no. So I think it's important to emphasize the fact that the current procedural posture that we're in under Rule 12 is that the county has the burden to demonstrate as a matter of law that there's no viable claim and no viable set of facts in which Walmart could be granted any relief for violation of its state and federal constitutional rights. And I think
would you agree that if Walmart had challenged the assessments in under the state scheme, that is under the tax assessment scheme,
right,
and succeeded, that there would be no damages that would have allowed a claim under either Section 1983 or under the uniformity clause?
Again, I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor, in a hypothetical sense for a couple of reasons. Number one, in this case, of course, there already was a timely 278 petition. So to the extent that there are any arguments that was an end run or an effort to evade the statute, that's not a situation that's actually reflected in the record. Number two, as far as the state and federal rights are concerned, what Chapter 278 relates to is a ministerial or an administrative process that's conducted by a branch of the executive branch to deal with property tax matters. But this matter relates to the issue of constitutional rights. And as far as the particular situation here is concerned,
To be clear, isn't the constitutional right that's being asserted is the right not to be treated unequally?
That's correct, Your Honor, but it's also a constitutional right not to be misused by governmental entities with arbitrary, intentional, or systematic discrimination.
Right, and so my question is, it goes to the heart of my question. If Walmart succeeds in a Chapter 278 challenge so that the assessment is changed in a way that is consistent with your position that there should be uniformity and that there's equal protection, there's unfairness going on.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have, am I correct that Walmart wouldn't have any basis, no damages to support either a Section 1983 claim or a claim under the uniformity clause?
I wouldn't agree with that, Your Honor, for this reason. As far as the constitutional rights are concerned, they can span a period of time of more than 1 year. So under the statute, that's an administrative remedy that's focused on a 1 year period. If we accept the hypothetical that you're presenting, there wouldn't be an opportunity, number one, to get injunctive relief with respect to past or prospective misconduct. There wouldn't be any ability under Section 1983 to recover attorney's fees. There wouldn't be any ability to recover any damages for a period that exceeds the 1 year period that's specified in the statute. So there would not be an opportunity to completely vindicate what I think a viable claim for intentional discrimination in violation of the state and federal.
If each tax assessment were responded to by Walmart with a challenge that I've suggested under the state chapter, and there's success each time, wouldn't that by itself prevent any cause of action under Section 1983? There's no basis for attorney's fees if there's no damages available.
Well, but that goes to the point that's raised by the counties. In other words, the county is setting up a situation where you could have a governmental entity that's engaged in invidious discrimination, and they can say, well, listen, we might be involved in that kind of activity, but then you have to start a litigation matter every single year, even if you're unable to detect that discrimination is going on. So with respect to your hypothetical, Your Honor, once you figure out that you're being unfairly treated, maybe prospectively, I just lost you, maybe prospectively that, you know, that might be...
We can still, just so you're clear, we can still see you. Okay. So you can continue on. I think what happens is, if I understand right, if there's a bandwidth problem on anybody's end, you might lose video. Okay. But so we'll add a little bit of time since I've interrupted your argument, but we can still hear you even if you can't see us.
And I didn't touch anything, so I don't know why that happened.
Yeah. And we can see you. So even though you can't see us, this isn't a top. Don't take this opportunity to make any gestures mocking us.
I wouldn't do that. So at any rate, you know, based on your hypothetical, you know, that might work prospectively, right? But if your hypothetical also assumes that there's some type of constitutionally suspect behavior going on under the applicable standard of review of systematic, arbitrary, or intentional discrimination, there would be no remedy of any kind for clearly what's been an infringement of constitutional rights that takes place prior to that 1 year. And that could be a variety of different kinds of remedies as we've articulated in our brief. We are concerned that there's something going on here. So in addition to damages, in addition to attorney's fees, in addition to injunctive relief, there may be other issues with respect to circumscribing the activities of the governmental officials involved. But that goes to the heart of the question. And the second issue, Judge, is the question of the applicable standard under Rule 12. That's the county's burden to show under any conceivable statement of a fact to a certainty, we wouldn't be able to prove anything that would give us the right to any relief under the constitutional claims. And as far as programmed land and odd and lotty are concerned, those are perfectly clear that those issues were not addressed in those cases. And I think that it's important to point out that in both programmed land and odd and lotty, excuse me, the counties were actually making the argument that's asserted here, that Chapter 278 completely preempted any claims under the state or federal constitution. And in both of those cases, that argument was rejected. And that's an argument that's reiterated now, both in the respondent's brief and the amicus brief, excuse me. And
Mr. Fox, I'd like to interrupt you a little bit with regard to what I think is your underlying premise, that you did not have notice of the assessment in time to file a Chapter 278 petition for earlier years. Is that right? Am I understanding that correctly? Because you're claiming some sort of failure to file earlier petitions because you weren't unaware of the unfairness.
That's right, Your Honor, because as far as these constitutional issues are concerned, and of course, we're dealing here in the abstract. We're dealing in the hypothetical realm with respect to the four corners of the complaint.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to point your attention to. I don't see that allegation in your complaint that you were unaware. In fact, it seems to me that in the complaint, you have some very specific allegations that you were aware and that you brought that to the county's attention and that the county refused to reconsider the assessment.
Your Honor, I'm not thinking precisely of the allegation that you're talking about in the complaint, but
well, the paragraphs I'm referring to, just so you have time to think about it, because of course you got a rebuttal, are paragraphs 12 through 14. Okay. And I just want to understand, because your hypothetical, the one that you gave in your reply brief, seems to assume that that's the crux of your argument, that this is that there was intentional discriminatory conduct of which Walmart was unaware. Yeah, and when it became aware, it filed its claim, and now it's trying to go back in time to remedy that unconstitutional, intentional discriminatory treatment.
Yes,
if that's true, it seems to me you have to allege it in your complaint or you don't get the benefit of that theory. But, I'll go back on mute and let you respond.
Okay. So, let me address that on a couple points. Number one, one of the arguments that we're making is that in order to evaluate the discriminatory conduct, that's not always necessarily discernible in a one-year period. So it takes some time to see the pattern that's displayed there. Number two, to your point, Your Honor, the county seems to be making the argument that we're back in the realm of code pleading. And as far as our complaint is concerned, and as far as the Rule 12 standard is concerned, we're only in the issue of notice pleading. And they seem to make the argument in their appellant's brief and also in the amicus brief that somehow or other we're articulated to set forth our claim in detail and with specificity in its entirety and prove it in the complaint. And that goes exactly to our argument that under Rule 12, we're entitled to have those allegations and every reasonable inference construed in our favor. And the county is making the reverse argument that somehow or other this complaint should be construed as an unequal assessment claim under Chapter 278, and then reformulate the complaint to construe it in favor of the counties in order to result in a dismissal with prejudice. And our point is that turns the applicable standard of review under Rule 12 on its head. And that's precisely the reason why the orders below should be reversed and remanded for further proceedings. I see that I'm about to run out of time now, so I'll conclude my comments and I'll wait for the rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. And just for the record, we did. I saw the clock was paused for a while to accommodate that short break. So you did receive a little bit of extra time accommodating the delay. So thank you for your argument. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel for the counties, I understand there's one brief filed on behalf of both counties, so we are anticipating one argument. You have the floor. Make sure you unmute your microphone because we see your lips moving, but we don't hear you. There, I think now we can hear you.
Okay, great. Well, let me start then. Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Mark Manderscheid, and I'm here this morning on behalf of Winona County and Martin County. In another 10 days, it will be the 85th anniversary since the Minnesota legislature adopted Chapter 278, a statute that has been in place for 85 years. By my count, there are 13 Minnesota Supreme Court decisions which explicitly hold or state that Chapter 278 is the exclusive remedy for the claims, the five claims, which are listed in Section 278.01. It is certainly not the case that the county is relying only on program land and Odenlade, but indeed the county is relying on all of the Minnesota Supreme Court precedents. The county's position is that Chapter 278 creates a cause of action. That's what it is. It provides a cause of action. If you will, it provides the key to the courthouse door for a taxpayer to make the claims that are labeled in Section 27801, and they can make those claims whether the basis is a violation of a statute or is the violation of a constitutional right. United National, Ham, Dalton, those cases which found constitutional violations all began as Chapter 278 cases. So Chapter 278 provides a cause of action. Oftentimes, the constitutional provisions are not themselves self-executing. There is a reason why 1983, for instance, exists, is because it provides the cause of action for vindication of federal rights. In Minnesota, Chapter 278 provides the cause of action. Our Supreme Court uses that term time after time in describing what 278 is. It sets forth the cause of action for bringing such claims as unequal assessment, illegality, or overvaluation. And so those are the types and the nature of claims, whether they derive from either a statutory right or a constitutional right. And that is borne out by the many decisions that have adopted the 278 procedure for going forward with and providing relief from constitutional violations. That is the very heart of the unequal assessment.
Counsel, I'd like to interrupt you and ask you to focus on promised land. It seems that the Minnesota Supreme Court certainly said what you just said, and it's, as you said, laid out in great detail in your brief that there are many opinions describing Chapter 278 as the exclusive remedy. In promised land, the Supreme Court, though, was very clear to say that while 278 provides the exclusive means to bring an action to challenge an assessment for the five types of challenges listed, which is almost exactly what you just said, it goes on to say, but we did not conclude, and here they're referring back to that long line of cases, we did not conclude that Chapter 278 provides the exclusive judicial means to make all property tax challenges. So there is another sort of property tax challenge out there, or at least the Minnesota Supreme Court has recognized that such a thing exists. So isn't the issue for us today whether the claims that have been stated against the two counties in this case fall under 278 or are this other type of property tax challenge?
Your Honor, that is the question. Is what Walmart has asserted, is it an assessment challenge? If it is an assessment case for either unequal assessment or overvaluation or illegality, if it's one of those types of claims, then it fits under Chapter 278. Judges Beitendorp and Benz both read through the complaints and they both found that what Walmart was asserting was an assessment claim. The reason why the counties included the copies of Walmart's Chapter 278 petitions and Walmart's two complaints is so that you can read for yourself what it is that Walmart says. Walmart's count one is entitled Unequal Assessments. The case law that Walmart cites as providing a basis for its claims are all Chapter 278 cases. So, Your Honor, we believe that Chapter 278 is the exclusive remedy. And so this becomes a simple case then. Is Walmart's complaint a legal pleading which seeks relief from an unequal assessment, from overvaluation or illegality? If it is, then we don't need to go where the Minnesota Supreme Court chose not to go in program land. Keep in mind, program land was a very unique case, and the entire issue, the difference really in opinion between the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court there was whether the classification calculation error was or was not an assessment challenge. The court found it was an assessment challenge. The county is asking you to also conclude that what at base, what Walmart is seeking here is relief from an assessment. If they're seeking relief from an assessment, then it fits under 278.
Can I press you just a little bit? I understand that argument that you're wanting to caption this entirely under simply an assessment challenge, but just so I understand how far your I guess I'd call it your preliminary argument goes, that this is exclusive no matter what, whether it's just an assessment challenge or not. Assume the facts are essentially as they are, but let's assume that Walmart discovered that evidence that would suggest that the decision to assess them differently from similarly situated properties was because Walmart employs too many women or too many members of a particular race. And they discovered this a day or two after the Chapter 278 statute of limitations ran. What's your position as to whether 278 provides the exclusive remedy into that situation?
I want to respond to that in two parts because I see it as coming in two parts. Let me take the statute of limitations first. There are at least five cases in which the Minnesota Supreme Court has upheld the facial constitutionality of the statute of limitations in Chapter 278. One of the clearest expressions of that analysis is in program land. And so if what Walmart is doing here is making a facial challenge to the statute of limitations, Walmart failed to give notice to the Attorney General, and so they have waived that argument for the purposes of this proceeding. But I think more importantly, Your Honor, the particular question here is what assessors do is they value property. That's what an assessment claim is. Whether the assessor has made an error in judgment, whether the assessor transposed his numbers, whether the assessor was motivated by improper motivations is irrelevant in the context of a property tax assessment. The taxpayer knows what the assessment is for you.
I agree, and that's my point. That's the premise of my question. I'm wondering how far your argument goes. Under my hypothetical, the Walmart discovers, assume that Walmart decides not to make a 278 challenge until it learns that, in fact, it appears that race or gender was the motivating factor to the unequal treatment. It's your view, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, this is what I wanted to test here with my question, that Chapter 278 provides the exclusive remedy, that Section 1983 is no longer available because of 278, even under that situation. And therefore, the limitations period would prevent a late discoverer of that evidence from bringing a Section 1983 challenge under the exclusivity argument that you're making for Chapter 278.
I will try again, Your Honor, but I think my answer is the same, is that if the claim is that the property is assessed too high, and that is at least one of the claims Walmart is making here, then that claim is a claim which has to do with the assessment of the property. And the assessment is either too high or it's too low. And we have the technical unequal assessment claims, those claims which say that even if my property is assessed correctly, it's still unfair because the assessor has improperly, whether you label it as intentionally, systematically, or arbitrarily, assessed other people's property at something which is less. That has caused me to have to pay more. That is the constitutional claim. And so we know that there are multiple constitutional claims in which courts have found violations of the Constitution because of the way that impermissible conduct was carried forward in the valuation of the property. Ultimately, property, an ad valorem tax, which is what a real property tax is about value. And so, Your Honor, the county's position here is it really doesn't matter why it is that the assessor came to the wrong number.
So we're clear. In my hypothetical, obviously, if the Section 1983 claim were raised under the theory that I've suggested, there are significant damages and attorney's fees that would be available under Section 1983 that would not be available in a 278 challenge. You, I take it that I assume you recognize that, and your position is, notwithstanding that difference, section or chapter 278 still covers the field, and there is no opportunity for a section 1983 lawsuit.
Your Honor, that is the position that we believe the United States Supreme Court has set forward both in Fair Assessment and in Truck Council. In looking at those cases, the United States Supreme Court has said tax is different. And reading those cases through, tax is different. And that is a conclusion that the Supreme Court says it goes way back, long before even the adoption of Section 1983 and 1971, through principles of comity or principles of things of that sort.
Well, now, just to be clear, in Fair Assessment, I think the Supreme Court added this caveat. In addition, the Missouri Supreme Court has expressly held that plaintiffs such as petitioner may assert Section 1983 claims in state court. So doesn't that distinguish the Missouri statutory scheme from the one that you're defending in this case?
Your Honor, there is an exception in those cases for what it describes, I believe, as a situation where there might be repeat litigation. Or I think the example the court uses is one where it says there has been an earlier adjudication, and then the government unit is refusing to comply with that earlier adjudication. So that would be an explicit situation there. Your Honor, I understand you've presented us with a hypothetical, but the hypothetical here is, or excuse me, not the hypothetical, but the reality here is we have Walmart's complaint. We know what their claims are, and there certainly are no claims in Walmart's complaint that the assessor here was motivated by either a gender or racial bias or anything of that sort. The strongest suggestion
I understand that. I hope you were recognizing I'm not suggesting that. I'm just trying to get the sense of your argument, the county's arguments, as it regards whether there is a fair and adequate remedy in state law, how far that goes, or whether you're saying, whether your position is that in this case there is a fair and adequate remedy, or in all cases there's a fair and adequate remedy, regardless of the constitutional challenge. And I think that would frame our response and how far we go with our rule of law one way or the other in this case. I at least that was the intent of my hypothetical.
Your Honor, I would try to summarize my position as saying the exclusive remedy language goes a really long ways, and there might be cases which are outside of it on some level, but certainly there is nothing in this case which would cause us to have a concern that under these facts, an assessment that Walmart claims is simply too high goes too far. I want to just conclude then by saying the county's position is that it is an exclusive remedy by 278. That's what our Supreme Court has said. A reading of this complaint fits fully within the types of claims that have been held to come under Chapter 278. We are asking the court to apply together the principles, the idea behind Fair Assessment and Truck Council. So we're asking the court here to affirm Judges Beitendorp and Bentz in all of their holdings and to issue a written opinion making clear that in Minnesota, that Minnesota should join the other 16, I believe, cases in our footnotes, which have held that for assessment cases, for unequal assessment, for overvaluation cases, there is no right of resort to a Section 1983 claim in the state courts. Instead, Chapter 278 provides the exclusive remedy for each of those five types of claims set forth in Section 278.01. Thank you. Judge, we can't hear anything.
Am I back on?
Ed is back on. Judge Ross, I could not hear you.
I'm sorry. I had said any rebuttal, so apologize for that. Yeah, this is technology that I'm not on the cutting edge of technology, in case you're wondering. Okay, counsel for appellant, any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like
to. Again, if you could, just for the record, if you could restate your name, so we're only keeping an audio recording of this. Hopefully this video will evaporate forever.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Edward Fox of Basford Remley appearing on behalf of the appellant, Walmart.
Thank you.
I'd like to address a couple of the key points. Number one, Mr. Manderscheid said, we're not relying exclusively on program land and odd and lottie, but on a series of 85 years of cases that talk about Chapter 278. And I think the point here is simply because those cases address 278, they do not address the specific case that's presented here. As far as the issue of the reservation of constitutional rights and claims are concerned, programmed land and odd and lottie are directly on point, and they directly address the issue of the potential existence and viability of those claims. And as Judge Bradfold pointed out, in programmed land on both page 523 and 530, the Minnesota Supreme Court was expressly clear that it was not holding that Chapter 278 was the exclusive remedy for all claims, particularly constitutional claims that satisfied the applicable evidentiary standard recited in our complaint with respect to intentional, arbitrary, or systematic discriminatory conduct.
Can I inquire, that being the case, what would be the affirmative statement of law that either, if they would have said it in one of those cases, or now you would ask us to say it, that their silence, what's the precept, what's the legal basis upon which we would rule affirmatively that 278 does not preclude the constitutional claim, therefore Rule 12 purposes, it should be remanded?
It would relate to deliberate discriminatory conduct that's singling out the taxpayer. So Mr. Manderscheid was making the argument that, well, the assessment just relates to a mathematical ministerial act. And, you know, that's not the issue that's presented here. The issue that's presented here is that Walmart is taking the position that it has been singled out for discriminatory conduct. So to address your question directly, Your Honor, in programmed land, what the court found was, well, this was just a bureaucratic error. So, and I do want to point out that in programmed land, the Minnesota Court of Appeals actually sustained the rulings below in favor of the taxpayer, and programmed land reversed that in a split 4-3 decision and said, because it's a bureaucratic error, as opposed to a deliberate, intentional, and malicious act, that it doesn't fall within the scope of a constitutional claim. And similarly, in odd and lottie, what the court found there was, because the alleged methodology for not assessing distressed property in the assessment process was even-handedly applied across the board, there was none of the requisite showing of disparate treatment below. So the ruling that I would ask the court to make here is that to the extent that there is a showing that there's arbitrary, systematic, or intentional discriminatory action directed at the taxpayer, that that's a viable claim that survives the very strict standard for the moving party under Rule 12, that we should have the opportunity to develop the record with respect to the viability of those claims. And that gets to the second point that I want to raise.
Can we jump in just one quick question here? Sure. So is it your position that a Chapter 278 challenge, that it wouldn't be enough to be victorious in a 278 challenge to show that your client was unequally treated, that that was singled out, that all of the other properties that are similarly situated were assessed at a lower valuation for tax purposes, that would not be sufficient for a 278 claim?
Well, in 278, that would be the kind of thing that you're doing, that you would be making a mathematical comparison between the assessed properties of other properties in the county or the state.
Isn't that the basis of an equal protection claim?
But, well, it's not, because the difference between the 278 claim is we're talking about purely a mathematical activity that isn't motivated by any kind of ulterior motive or malign intent. The constitutional claims that we're alleging here is that we are actually alleging our claims with respect to the applicable constitutional standard addressed in both odd and lottie and programmed land. And this is what the concern is. If the court will look at the county's brief at page 31, they make the extraordinary claim that that whether the assessment problems alleged by Walmart were the result of mere errors or the result of intentional misconduct, Walmart's efforts to seek unequal assessment relief still fail. And the amicus brief goes even farther than that. And if the court looks at the amicus brief, they're making a claim that Walmart's constitutional claims depend entirely on its ability to challenge its valuation under 278. So they're asking this court to make an extremely sweeping claim and a sweeping ruling that was rejected in programmed land and Ott and Lotti in order to sustain the orders below. So in conclusion, we would respectfully request that the court reverse those orders below as an overstatement of the governing law. And in fact, the counties are asking the court to make new law that would be go beyond the holdings in Ott and Lotti and programmed land.
Thank
and
you.
Under the applicable Rule 12 standard to reverse for further proceedings in the district court.
Thank you. And thank you to all counsel, not just for your oral argument today, but for your thorough briefing. And that includes the amicus briefs that we've received. We appreciate when issues are well presented and narrowly focused. And matter is submitted at this time, and we will take it under advisement, issuing our opinion within the statutory period. And thank you for presenting your arguments today in this unusual venue of virtual reality. And with that being said, I think that's the last case we have for oral argument today, so we are in recess.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.